with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. Good luck to all of you NaNoWriMo people. You're halfway through, and you've got 14 days left, and keep going. And now I want to turn to a writer who, well, he wrote a book because he did something absolutely fantastic. He is a pilot, and it is just, all of you know that my husband was also a pilot and that we did a lot of flying. And I want to welcome Captain Bob Young to Joy on Paper. He wrote a book called Vagabond Pilot, A Voyage of Discovery and Renewal. Hi, Captain Bob.
Patsy?
Yes, I'm here. Do you hear me?
Okay. How do you hear me now?
Now I hear you, Bob.
Okay. Well, good morning.
Good morning. Oh, it's so, it's so good that you're on, because I was telling my listeners and reminding them that my husband was a pilot. So I have a special affection for pilots. You guys are special. And it's wonderful. Your book, Vagabond Pilot, is fascinating. And it's really exciting to have you on the program. So tell us about how this all started.
Oh, my. Well, first of all, thank you so much, Patsy, for having me. And a good morning to you and all your listeners. It's just getting the day started here in Southern California. So I've only had one cup of coffee, so I just want to warn everybody, I'm not, the cobwebs are still there. How did it all start? Life is what happens when you're busy making plans, I guess. Started a long, long time ago when I was a wee little fellow in, growing up in on Long Island in Rockville Center, New York. Kind of thing shaped me and led all the way to a significant reversal in my life and my dreams, and I had to regroup.
There was an awful lot of flying going on around Long Island.
Yes. When I grew up, I was such an aviation aficionado and watched all the airliners fly into Idlewild Airport at that time, before it was Kennedy Airport. I just had this affection for it, cemented by a lot of trips we used to make to the grandparents in Florida every Easter and Christmas school vacations. My father's parents retired very early and moved to booming Florida. And so it was always a treat as a little toddler to run through these planes and get into the cockpit. And then my dad, I remember specifically as a little toddler, was on the beach, would fly with me. So I was hooked.
That's what happens with pilots. You get started. And of course, the plane that you flew is a Grumman, right?
Yes, a Grumman American Yankee. It's a two-seater. Originally, it came with a 108 horsepower engine. I souped mine up to 160, which basically means nothing except it can power this plane a little better and carry a little more weight. It goes about 130 knots in still air, true airspeed.
Well, it's appropriate that you would fly a Grumman. Grumman is just great. Now, my husband, as I mentioned, he was a pilot, but he was also an aeronautical engineer. And he had the opportunity when he came, first visited America, one of the things that he wanted to do was to meet Mr. Grumman. So, because Mr. Grumman, of course, was an aeronautical engineer, so he managed to meet him. He was it was just for him. It was a thrill, of course.
That was on Long Island. Yes.
Yes, it was on Long Island. Yes,
that's where Grumman was when they built the lunar excursion module there.
Exactly.
The Apollo program. Yeah.
So when did you start flying, and then how did we get into this project here?
I started learning to fly when I first moved out to California in I moved out in 73. I started to learn to fly in 1979, got my license on leap year day, 1980.
So that's 1980, and so let's flash forward to when did you start the voyage across America?
Well, that's a good point. Maybe we should set a little background and tell everybody. I was living the good life, La Dolce Vita, as the book says. And then my parents died and my brother died. And all the family business fell upon my shoulders, and I discovered some unfortunate things about my brother. And his conduct caught up with the rest of the family, and especially me, since I had started working with him in New York to help him out. And unbeknownst to me, a lot of the bad stuff came and bit me where I basically lost everything as a result. From the house on the hill with the lap pool and the wolf stove, you know, it was a real comeuppance, because candidly I had lived a very charmed and blessed life. My father was a very, very successful real estate lawyer in New York, one of the biggest real estate lawyers for many years. Represented every major builder and developer, including our former president and his father, and the Helmsleys, and you name it, Lefrak, City, everything, because his partner was the city planning commissioner, so they were heavily ingrained in New York politics. And my dad provided very well for us children, four children. And then when all of this happened, you know, when life hits you, it's like, oh my goodness. It was very painful. It was, now what do I do? I'm now, when this all happened, I just turned 71. I was still actively engaged and practicing in my law practice out here. And I honestly fell apart. I just did not know what to do. And that's how the genesis of this trip started to take shape.
And it was a big decision to make, to fly across the country. Did you plan that you were going to do this long trip, or did you just start in spurts? Or what was the overall plan?
Well, the plan was I needed to go. I have many wonderful friends across the country, and because of my plight at the time, my dear friends Bruce and Dolly, who lived out in Camarillo, said, "You stay with us for as long as you want," and they were returning a favor that I did for them when they first moved out to California. So I cashed in my chips, as I said. And but, you know, after a while, when you stay with people, the fish starts to stink, right? And I realized I needed to go, and I didn't know where to go. I had no clue. And, you know, I didn't want to be homeless and in my car, but that's pretty much what I was facing. So I realized there's one thing I could do, and that's I'll get in my plane and I'll fly. And I had always dreamed about flying my plane across the country. I had driven it a couple of times, and I thought, well, let's see where the universe is going to take me. So I started planning a trip, and I thought originally just to go cross country and that would be it. But then the challenge of making it round trip and how the trip changed me motivated me to make it a round trip back to Los Angeles.
And at that point, did you also plan the book? I mean, you planned that you're going to write a book about it, or you just...
Ah, good question. You know, it was... we all have our travails. You know, we are frail creatures. And I was always a decent writer. I had been a lawyer, and I mainly did entertainment and business litigation. So I wrote a lot. And I was a voracious reader, and I decided, well, okay, maybe this would be good therapy and see what I could do and maybe put a book out of this. I'm going to write a book. And so I decided as I would go, I would write each chapter. And that's how I pretty much did it.
Well, I think that was a great idea because you are a fine writer. You have a natural writing talent. Well, lawyers do so much writing, and they are always good at organizing and planning, but you have a natural talent. You really capture the events and the people that you visit along the way. But it was a brave thing to do at your age to do that. And, you know, so many people have gone through, well, they've just gone through hell these past few years with losing people, with losing, and, you know, even today, it may be worse today, so many people are going broke, you know.
It's not easy.
No, it's
not easy.
It's not
and easy. Thank you for the kind words. That was very sweet. Thank you.
Well, you have this great ability to write. I'm glad that you thought of it right, you know, from the beginning, because it's always more difficult to write after. It's good to always keep notes.
Well, you know, it's very interesting you say that, because when we got into the editing process, it was enormous how many times we went through what I wrote. I couldn't have imagined doing it afterwards, because, and one of the things that I think I managed to capture was all the material and what people said and who I met. Everything was very fresh when I wrote it contemporaneously versus afterwards. But I was very proud, honestly, when I started going through the editing and said, holy smoke, you did this? Wow.
Well, you did a good job, because I always advise people. People will say, well, I want to, you know, I start my program. I say, this is a program for people who, you know, for writers and for those who are dreaming of writing. I always tell people, maybe you're not going to write today. You know, you're 30 years old. You're not going to write your book now, but keep a journal, keep notes, because it's so important when you go to write it down, just to have those notes, to have exactly the references that you have. And of course, you were able to capture dialogue, and it's really, you've done a wonderful job. So on the day that you started off for this journey, this big vagabond journey of yours, you must have been a little bit frightened about what you were planning to do.
I was. I didn't know where I was going. I mean, I had destinations. I had a route, had arranged to see people, but I didn't know what was. I was very apprehensive. My friend said I was crazy. What are you doing? Where are you going? You need to find a job. You need to work. You need to do. You need to this. I just felt the universe calling me for something new and something different. And if anything, I could share now in retrospect is that the universe does provide, no matter how bleak things look. And I guess this is from life's perspective, that I've been fortunate to live enough years, but you gain perspective and you see how the dots connect. This thing called life is pretty fantastic, you know. It's a day, my goal is my feet hit the ground, it's a great day.
So you got in touch with your friends and you said, I'm on my way, sort of.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so what was your first stop? Who did you, because that was like...
Well, the first stop, I flew to Tucson, and I picked familiar friends, my dear friend Phyllis and her brother and family. But when I got to Yuma, I just said, oh my, what are you doing? What are you doing? And then I would get back in the plane and I would feel comfortable. And I think that's the interesting thing that I hope I've gotten across in the book, is having the aircraft for so long. I had the 29er Lima since 1994, and then I modified her and upgraded her, et cetera. You develop such a kind of a relationship or synchronicity with the machine. That's one of the reasons why I also went, because I felt so comfortable. You know, this is a place I feel very much at home. We call it being in the left seat. Another great book, if you ever want to read some great aviation books, by the way, Patsy, is by the famed aviation writer Robert J. Serling. That's Rod Serling's brother. And one of his best books is The Left Seat. It's just a place of solace for me. So that's one of the reasons why I decided to get into 29er Lima. Well, but when I got to Yuma, I said, oh my, what am I doing? Until I got back up in the air and said, well, of course, this is why you're doing this.
Wow. So you get to your friends do they think you're crazy for trying this, or are they worried? They're like, are you really going to go all the way across the country?
Well, my friend Bruce, who I stayed with, I just mentioned, he and I had a tearful goodbye because he was very concerned. Everybody's worried, oh, you're going to crash, you're going to do this, you're going to, you know. As a pilot, you always take that into consideration. It's a measured risk. How could I say? More dangerous than driving a car. You know, when you drive a car, you kind of blank out and wow, I just drove 50 miles. Where was I? But in a plane, you know, and especially in my plane, I have no autopilot. So it was constant flying and monitoring. And as I describe in quite detail, and that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to share the flying of what it's really like in a little plane, what pilots really do. I think we all kind of wonder, you know, that along with the experiences of my friends and America was really what I was trying to get across in the book.
Well, you do, and I love, of course, how you write about flying and about being in the airplane, because my husband and I, we had a part ownership in a Cessna in England when we lived in England.
Oh, wow. I was just going to ask you what kind of planes you flew in.
And we flew out of White Waltham, which was an old RAF grass airfield.
Uh-huh.
And it is where Prince Philip learned to fly. So it was a lovely, you know, it was RAF. People don't realize a lot of the RAF fields were grass. It was just a lovely place to fly, and we had so much fun. And as I said, we had a part ownership in the Cessna. We flew almost every week, you know, if the weather was good, and it was really a magnificent plane to fly. You know, when you're flying over, like, England and Scotland and Ireland and Northern Europe, it's a wonderful plane to fly.
You have a magic carpet, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I have to take a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to start and go across country with you, and you're going to tell us some of your exciting adventures, okay?
Can't wait, Patsy.
So hold on.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guest, pilot Captain Bob Young, the author of Vagabond Pilot, A Voyage of Discovery and Renewal. Let's continue with this adventure story of yours.
All right, Patsy, let's.
There's a lot that goes into planning a trip like this. I mean, you have so many landings to make, so many takeoffs to take. it's not something that's easy to plan. You have to really know what you're doing and where you're going.
Absolutely. This is part of the discipline of being a pilot, is treating it with the respect the discipline requires, because when you don't, as my instructor would say when I was rushing around to my pre-flight, if you rush, you die. So take your time, you know. So everything was required some that kind of diligence. And flight planning, of course. I was going to new locations, different air routes, different environment, so I had to learn about each of the destinations and the arrival procedures, et cetera, et cetera.
And dealing with a lot of different air traffic controllers.
That was one of the most wonderful things that I experienced. And I should have realized this, but the air traffic control system this country has is just, for all the readers who are not familiar with flying or not, or out there, it is just terrific. These are just an amazing bunch of professionals who operate and run a system that is really just, I'm always stupefied by how smooth and professional it is. And what happened to me is, having flown in California and the Southwest pretty much my whole many years of flying, now I'm going across the country, and that common voice in my headset was the most comforting, connective, reassuring thing. I'm not exactly sure what it was, whether it was the common language we all use at every place. It's the same. The procedures are the same. But whatever it was, And then when you got, of course, into New Jersey and New York and they started being sassy, well, that was even more fun. But it was just a great experience.
So when you would arrive in an airport, would you tell them what you were doing? this
Well, you don't share too many things unless you know you make a real bad mistake. Like when I think when I was finally arriving in Danbury, which was my final East Coast destination, because my friend. Boss had a hangar. I could park the plane there for a while. I couldn't pick out the airport. In the East, it was much more difficult to pick out airports because it's so heavily and densely forested, and I couldn't pick it out. I think I saw it. I think I saw a little sliver out there. So the controller says, you know, advise when you have the airport in sight, because then they would transfer their frequency over to the tower for you. And I couldn't see it. So I was getting close. I was within 7 miles and I still couldn't see it. And you're supposed to really report to the tower when you get about 10 miles out. And I confessed to the New York controller, I think I have the airport in sight. And he says, and being the ex-New Yorker, I can kind of imitate. He says, "You think?" You know, in that real New York accent. And that's when I finally confess. I said, "Well, I'm from Los Angeles. It's the first time here." And so he laughed and he said, "Okay, then, you know, 12 o'clock on your nose, 7 miles, contact Danbury Tower." But anyway, that was the one time of true confession over the airwaves.
Well, we had a few times when we went to Scotland. We flew a lot to Scotland. It was our favorite destination. Going up to Scotland, you know, in jumps, we'd stop along the way sometimes to see friends. But our ultimate destination would be Scotland, mostly because we had friends who smoked salmon, you know, commercial salmon. And so we could eat all the smoked salmon we wanted. So we'd fly up there just to eat smoked salmon. some of those controllers up there in Scotland, they do have an accent.
Oh boy, I was going to say, could you even understand them?
Well, they're pretty good. They try to speak
English. Right?
Yeah, the King's English, but they've got it in there. So we've had a few fun experiences. After a while, most of the small airports knew us, and my husband was flying in, because he always wore cowboy clothes in Europe, and so he stood out, and they loved it. When you got to different places, and so really, to have friends who are excited to see you and to take part, really, in this adventure of yours.
That was really the overwhelming for me, because, as I shared, I was pretty beat up, and I didn't know what to do, and I got in my plane, and I obviously needed a lot of love and help myself regain my footing and build up my self again. I was just so nourished and sustained by my friends. It was just an outpouring for me and for them, and you know, eternally grateful. You know, who we travel with. So yes, it was just terrific.
Now, of course, one of the things that, as you were flying across the country, you were in different environments. Of course, you didn't hit bad weather too often, but I think you did occasionally hit some bad weather.
I did. It was a new flying experience for me. Having flown, as I said, in the Southwest, we are very spoiled out here as pilots. The weather is so benign. Sky is always blue in L.A. When we get rain, it's a big event these days as the weather climate change happens. But so even though I have an instrument rating, I didn't do very much flying in inclement weather, and you really don't do very much flying in bad weather in a small plane. My biggest concern was, as you mentioned, the weather was going to be different in the summertime, convective activity. and I was on my toes, all that. And this is a little plane, and I had to weave myself through many clouds. And when I got into Dallas, for instance, I didn't want to use my instrument license and my rating because I was a little bit rusty, and I was trying just not to put any pressure on myself to get anywhere. Going, coming back, this was another interesting thing that happened. The tenor of the trip changed. It was, when I was going, it was just to go and accomplish doing crossing the country. Coming back, I had to get home for medical appointments and things. I had my mojo back, so now I wanted to get back and ride, get on the horse. And I was dealing with a very difficult thing called get home. And it almost killed me in my experience with the weather in Colorado. Was your husband instrument rated?
Oh, well, he was in the Israeli Air Force. Yes, he was.
Oh, yeah, I guess he was.
Yeah. So he was. And he also was with an aircraft company, and he flew prototype airplanes. So he was, something really special like that. But still,
you didn't hesitate about going flying with him.
No, I didn't. And we had so much fun with friends and larger planes, four-seater planes. We did some flying over Germany. We flew actually with an RAF pilot, and he took us over Germany to his exact route that he took in World War II. So we had some wonderful, wonderful times flying over there. For people who have never been in a small airplane, I think this story, as I said, because you write so well, you do give a sense of what it is like to fly in a small plane. It's a very special feeling to be up there. And as you said, I love when you say flying through the clouds. People would always say to me, "Well, what would happen when you flew through a cloud?" Oh, it was fun.
I remember when I first got my instrument rating, how scared I was of going into the clouds. And, and like anything, you learn and you get a little more comfortable with it. So it was great. But I think you asked me before, you were saying about what did I see? And the other thing I wanted to share with you, you're bringing it to my mind, is sitting in that left seat and looking out at the topography, the country. It was more impactful to me than when I did it by car when I was a young law student. And I basically remember there was an awful lot of corn in the Midwest, but I never had the perspective I had from the air and seeing how the country grew and followed the rivers and the huge expanse of our land. I wish everybody could see this, because you start to think a little different, than what we hear. And I totally experienced an America totally different. I think I talk about this, from the air, and when meeting all the wonderful people, there was none of this that I would turn on the TV and see. You know, it was just so disconcerting, but so in juxtaposition kind of my experience. Maybe it was just the sense of accomplishment that had me exhilarated. I'm not sure, but I think there's so much to see, and I wish everybody could see what I saw. I'm trying to post some videos now on my author page on Amazon to kind of share more about it. Sorry to ramble.
No, it's good. I think people would enjoy seeing your videos, and as you say, when you're looking out of that plane window, and you have this special feeling knowing that you're up there. And my husband used to love when there'd be like clouds. He'd zip through them for me, because I love flying through the clouds. So this was so good for you. You really came out of this a stronger person.
Absolutely. And it has changed me. It truly has. I have, for the first time in my existence, I don't count my happiness based upon possessions or position or whatever we seem to strive for and do. And again, I share that perhaps it's because of the perspective that aging brings. And, you know, they say also it brings a little wisdom, but, you know, many who know me would say, no, seriously, the sense of accomplishment made me realize, you know, you can do anything you want. And you just got to trust the universe. It's all going to work out. So it has shifted my perspective about my personal happiness and life. And no matter how tough it gets, it's going to be all right. I think I tell the adage, I don't know if you remember it from your quick read before you got me on the air, Patsy, but I tell the adage my father tells me about. He would always say, when things are bad, you know, and rough, just keep getting to tomorrow, the judge could die. And so finally, he would always say that. I said, well, Dad, what are you talking about, the judge could die? He said, well, when I was a young lawyer, I had this case, and I kept getting beat up by the judge. And he was an older judge, and no matter what I did, he was against, and I just kept continuing the journey, trying to get to tomorrow and see maybe something different would happen. And sure enough, one day I got a call in the office, the judge died. And so the case was assigned to a new judge who I happened to go to law school with, and lo and behold, I won the case. So my son, just keep getting to tomorrow. So that's kind of my an adage that I've adopted. And
you have to keep going.
All of us out there, you know, just keep getting to tomorrow. It's all going to work out. It does.
It is strange, but yes. And I think one of the wonderful things about this book, and I hope people will get it because there is a lot of wisdom in this book. There is a lot of thought, of your thought process about losing everything and yet gaining so much. And that's why I tell people that, you know, it's never too late. You could do this at 71. Now, a lot of people aren't going to be able to fly, but they can still write a book and find a lot of joy in doing the research about the book. And do the traveling, meeting people, talking to people, all of that expands your horizons, makes you think, and not dwell on whatever loss you have. There's something that you can do out there, something that will give you what you now have, this absolute positivity, which is so important.
Well, it's very true. We all beat ourselves up. Like I said, you know, I'm always reminded of that saying from the alien when Jodie Foster meets him in Contact, and you are such an interesting species, but you're so cruel to one another. I just felt so much love from so many people and good in so many things that, you know, when you come from that place and you do it, you can be the pilot wherever you want to go. You don't need a plane. You know, and just keep getting to tomorrow. Keep having adventures. At least that's my humble theory now. It's getting me by.
Well, it's getting you by, and it's keeping you going, and I think there's more to come. Nice thing about discovering that you're a good writer is that you don't want to stop.
You're absolutely right there.
I don't know if you've started the next book, but I'm sure there's another book in you. And meanwhile, you can have fun promoting this book. This is a wonderful book to promote, lots of opportunities. It's called Vagabond Pilot, A Voyage of Discovery and Renewal by Captain Bob Young. You know, we have a Yiddish saying, Beshert. It's meant to be.
Well, yes.
Meant to be that you would be on my program today and that I could keep you for the whole hour, because it wouldn't have been enough time to speak to you for just a half an hour. I really needed this extra time with you because I think you're fascinating.
I really thank you so much, Patsy, for allowing me and having me for that extra hour. Thrilled to be here, and you're my first radio interview, so I'm really very grateful for and honored to share my story with your readers, and hope that and listeners, readers, and soon to be readers, and I hope they can find inspiration in the story, because it really, for me, has helped me immensely.
Well, I think
and
you're
I hope,
inspiring.
But on Amazon, there's a little blurb about the author where I'm posting my videos, and we'll have that website up soon.
As soon as you have the website, you let me know, and I will. I think you are an inspiration, and I am so happy.
Well,
you have in your voice a wonderful, wonderful joy. And I'm so happy that you found some joy in life, and now that you're going to spread it around and make other people happy, and that they can believe that they can do anything if they want.
Thank you, Patsy. I appreciate your the love and support from you and your listeners, and yes we can. Yes. So thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. It was great talking to you, and you're going to be back for when you get the next book. Okay.
You got it.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
All right. Oh, that's nice. That was nice. A pilot. Oh, my goodness. I can tell you, when we used to land on that grass runway, it was so sweet. And I do hope that you will get this book, because it's not just about a pilot. It's really about a voyage of discovery. I love this book. Very, very well written. Bye-bye now.